Well, I hope everyone had a wonderful and productive week. Of course, we've kept the Passover. We've kept 6 days of unleavened bread. And now we're keeping the last day of unleavened bread. We are keeping, we're in the midst of the spring festival season. But the Christian world around us is also keeping their spring festival season. It's a far different festival than what the Bible teaches. Theirs started last Sunday with Palm Sunday. And it goes through Sunday tomorrow, which of course is Easter. The culmination of what is known as Holy Week. And that's 8 days. It's also referred to as the octave of Easter. Octave, referring to eight. How many days does the Bible say to keep this time of year? 8 days. Passover and 7 days of unleavened bread. We keep 8 days. They keep 8 days. Coincidence? No. Satan is a counterfeiter. And he counterfeits God's festivals as he counterfeits the Sabbath. And at this time of year, he counterfeits the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Even brings in the name of a pagan fertility goddess, and people accept it willingly. You know, when I was preparing this sermon, I started to think back to when I observed that other spring festival as a young boy. And sometimes it is funny what you remember. As I thought back to Easter as a child, first thing I thought of was the new clothes that I would get for Easter. When my brother, sister, and I were just kids, we always got new clothes for Easter. That seemed to be a tradition. In fact, everyone around us, because we lived in most of the people were Catholic in our area. Everyone around us did. And perhaps as children, some of you also received new clothes for Easter. And of course, we would wear those clothes to church on Easter morning. And I can also remember the chocolate rabbits and eggs we'd get on Easter morning, and we of course would eat some before we went to church. And you know what else I remembered about Easter as a kid? Going to the movies. Going to the movies on Easter Sunday afternoon. We did that for a few years when we were just kids. Went to church, ate our candy, we ate our lunch with an Easter ham. Festivities were over. So my older brother and a couple of his friends from the neighborhood would go to the movies. And as the little brother, I would tag along. And I specifically remember two movies that we saw in consecutive years. And that may have been the only 2 years we went, but I remember the two movies. And I looked up the movies to see what year they came out. The movie that I especially remembered and I really liked was House on Haunted Hill. Came out in 1958, when I was 8 years old. Vincent Price was in it, and that was a scary movie, at least to this eight-year-old it was. I saw the movie on Easter Sunday. I don't know if you can see a connection about that, Easter and House on Haunted Hill, but I did. The other movie came out in 1957, a year earlier. And I couldn't remember the name of that movie. I just remember that John Wayne, Sophia Loren, and Rosano Brazzi were in it. And they were in the Sahara Desert. So I looked it up under John Wayne's movies. And I found out it was called Legend of the Lost. Now, I don't remember much about the movie, but the parts I do remember actually fit in with the point of this sermon. Legend of the Lost was about a search for treasure in the Sahara Desert. Rosano Brazzi, some of you may not even know who he is, but if you ever saw the movie South Pacific, he played the French guy who was in love with Mitzi Gaynor, but he's actually Italian. But Rosano Brazzi was the villain, and he strands John Wayne and Sophia Loren in the desert without water, without food, leaves them to die so he can find the treasure and keep it for himself. And I remember how they suffered being lost in the desert. I can still picture how thirsty they were, how dry their mouths were, how parched their lips were. The makeup guy or woman did an excellent job showing that. And all that made a lasting impression on this 7-year-old. And I remember how they struggled to survive. And of course, since John Wayne was always the hero, they survived. As they wandered in the desert, they came across these Roman ruins. And that was where the treasure was supposed to be. And when they came upon the ruins, they found a backpack that Rosano Brazzi's character had stolen. And yes, he was nearby. And you can guess what happened when he and the Duke met up again. But that part doesn't matter here. And when they first found the backpack, they found some canned peaches in it. And I've remembered that scene all these years. Believe it or not, it's over 60 years ago. I know some of you are astounded that it was that long ago, but trust me, it was. And I remember how John Wayne took his knife and opened the can of peaches, and of course he let Sophia Loren take a drink first. So remember, they were dying of thirst in the desert. And I can still see them quenching their thirst by drinking the juice from the can of peaches, and then they ate the peaches. And I remember after that, as a kid, I would drink the juice from an open can of peaches, just like John Wayne and Sophia Loren did it in the movie. And after all these years, I can still picture them dying of thirst in that desert wilderness. Now, why did I bring up that movie in this sermon and stressing the part that they were in a desert wilderness? I would say most of you have a pretty good idea why I did that. People wandering in a desert wilderness. Does that remind us of anything in the Bible that started at this season of the year? Brethren, let's all of us picture wandering in the wilderness, because that's what we're going to look at today. How the Israelites wandered in a physical wilderness, and how we, brethren, can wander in a spiritual wilderness. Yes, we left the spiritual wilderness of this world when we were called into God's church. And as we learn from the days of unleavened bread, we leave Egypt. But, brethren, we can return there. We can wander in the wilderness and then find ourselves right back in Egypt. And we are reminded of that as we do keep this last day of unleavened bread. Let's first turn to the book of Exodus. Remember, the children of Israel left Egypt during the days of unleavened bread. And they started off great. They were so happy to leave Egypt. But then they saw Pharaoh's army coming after them about the sixth day of unleavened bread. Exodus 14, verses 11 and 12. Unfortunately, the Israelites had short memories. Exodus 14, verse 11. Then they said to Moses, "Because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, 'Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians'? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness." It's like they're saying to Moses, "We tried to tell you we were happy being slaves in Egypt. We didn't want to leave that wonderful life that we had. But no, you wouldn't listen to us. Instead, you bring us out into the wilderness to die." Hard to believe, but that's how they felt. But of course, God protects them and saves them. They cross the Red Sea, and then they come to the wilderness of Sin. An interesting name. I think we can see how it fits in with the Israelites. So now what do they do at this time? Well, they start to complain again because they have no food or water. Exodus 16, verse 1. And they journeyed from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they departed from the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, "Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full. For you've brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with water or hunger." Verse 4, then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you. And the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day that I may test them, whether they will walk in my law or not." So after this, God sends them manna. Now, as they came into the wilderness, do you think God knew that they would need food? Or do you think that when they complained about not having food, God thought to himself, "Oh, that's right, I forgot about that. They need food. Oh, what am I going to send them? I know. I'll send them bread from heaven and I'll call it manna." Was it just a coincidence that God sent bread from heaven? Then, of course, later, Jesus Christ talked about bread from heaven. Is that another coincidence? Hold your place here in Exodus. Let's go to John 6, verse 48. Gospel of John. John 6, verse 48. Did Christ just happen to think that this would be a good analogy to use here? No. Jesus the Christ was the one who gave them that physical bread in the wilderness. And he's the one who gives us spiritual bread. John 6, verse 48. "I am the bread of life. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread which comes down from heaven, and one may eat of it and not die." In verse 51, "I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I shall give is my flesh, which I shall give for the life of the world." And of course, something we remembered on Passover evening. Let's go back to Exodus. Exodus 16, this time, verse 35. And it's a point I want to actually bring up later in the sermon. Exodus 16, verse 35. "And the children of Israel ate manna 40 years until they came to an inhabited land. They ate manna until they came to the border of the land of Canaan." Can you imagine eating manna for 40 years? Exodus 17, verse 3. "And the people thirsted there for water, and the people complained against Moses and said, 'Why is it you have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?'" So the Israelites leave Egypt. They're happy until Pharaoh's army catches up with them. Then they complain. Then God rescues them through the Red Sea, and they're happy again until they get hungry and thirsty. Then they complain again. So God gives them manna and water, and they're happy again until they get thirsty again. So they complain again. Do we see a pattern here? Have you ever noticed about people who are always complaining about one thing or another? And I'm talking about people who are chronic complainers. And of course, all of us will complain about something at one time or another. But there are people who always seem to be complaining about something all the time. They could be family members. They could be co-workers. And yes, they can even be brethren in the church. But have you noticed that when you answer the question the complainers are complaining about, or you solve the problem that they're complaining about, does that mean that they totally stop their complaining? No, not at all. Witness the Israelites. Complainers always seem to come up with something else to complain about. Time after time, God solved the Israelites' problems, but time after time, they always found something else to complain about. But that's what complainers do. They complain. That seems to be their job description. It's like they'll say, okay, let's solve that area that I complained about. So what other area can I come up with so I can still complain? And you know, they always seem to come up with something else to complain about. I think I'll remember this specific example for the rest of my life, probably. Let's remember the example of the Israelites, because their constant complaining finally cost them, as we'll see later. And over the years, we've had our share of complainers in the church. Does that mean we shouldn't ask questions? Of course not. But it seems complainers never just ask. They always seem to demand. Did the Israelites just politely ask when they were hungry or thirsty? No, they made demands. And they weren't making demands on God. Yes, they put the question to Moses, but they were actually putting it to God. Let's look here in Exodus 17, verse 2. Look at what they say here. Therefore, the people contended with Moses. That doesn't mean they were very nice to Moses. And said, give us water that we may drink. So why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord? They made a demand. Give us water. Didn't even add a please after it. As we keep this last day of unleavened bread, that's something for all of us to keep in mind. Something for all of us to put out of our lives as we come out of any spiritual wilderness we may be in. I always like to use this particular example. It just fits in with the Israelites' example. This happened back in 1996, a time when there was a new beginning in the church. Some of you remember that. Judy and I went to this particular area on the weekly Sabbath, and I had the sermon. And before services, a lady wanted to speak with me because she had a complaint. Again, this is 1996, early 1996. She told me that before, she only had to drive 20 minutes to get to services. But now, she had to drive 40 minutes to get to services. And she did not like that. And she wanted us to find a place closer to where she lives, so she wouldn't have to drive so far to get to services. And that's how she put it. I listened to her and tried to explain that a lot of people had to drive longer distances to get to services since we were so spread out. We didn't have the number of congregations that we once had. But as I was explaining this, I didn't tell her that my wife and I had to drive close to 3 hours to get to services. I was thinking about my 3-hour drive as she was complaining about her 40-minute drive, but I held my tongue. Later on Pentecost, I again had the sermon in this same area. And the same lady complained about the people who had the key to the building that we met at forgot that we were meeting on that Sunday. That was the first Sunday that we were meeting. They were used to us meeting only on Saturday. It's just one of those things that can happen. So we had to wait to get into the building while someone got the key. And it was, I don't know, a 15-minute wait to get in there. But this lady came up to me, and she was highly upset that she had to wait outside for the door to be opened. Now, we all had to wait, but she was upset that she had to wait. Another big complaint that she had was she didn't like getting up early for morning services. So on the weekly Sabbath, that congregation met in the morning. And she actually told me that she wanted us to switch services to the afternoon so she can sleep in on Sabbath morning. And of course, she didn't attend every Sabbath. She admitted that a lot of Sabbaths she just slept in because she didn't like morning services. And of course, she didn't attend with us long. Her wilderness consisted of her physical discomforts. It seems she never came out of that physical wilderness that she was in, or we should say spiritual wilderness. And so she constantly wandered in her wilderness complaining. Did the children of Israel, after they came out of Egypt, did they see God's plan for them? No, they didn't. Even after seeing all the miracles God performed to bring them and keep them out of Egypt, all they could see was their physical discomforts. And so they complained. The spiritual took a back seat. They looked first to the physical. And brethren, we can too. Preparing for Passover and unleavened bread, we can do some physical de-leavening of our homes, of our cars, our workplaces, but no spiritual de-leavening. And brethren, when we do neglect the spiritual de-leavening, we are wandering in the wilderness. And that's a good analogy to keep in mind on this last day of unleavened bread. The children of Israel wandered in a physical wilderness. And as this day reminds us, we can wander in a spiritual wilderness. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians 10. 1 Corinthians 10. Paul reminded us here in 1 Corinthians 10 to learn from the Israelites in the wilderness. 1 Corinthians 10, let's pick it up in verse 1. Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea. All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. And a question for all of us during these days, is God well pleased with us? Have we learned from the children of Israel's example, their bad example? Continue, verse 6. Now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. And do not become idolaters as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality, as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted God, or as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Verse 10, nor complain, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. And then verse 11, now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Would any of us complain as the children of Israel did? Have you ever been lost or seen a movie or TV program where someone is lost in a desert or wilderness? And often what will they do? Well, they'll wander in circles. They'll come back to where they began. In old movies, they'll say something like, look at that rock that looks like a wolf howling. That's the same rock we passed 3 days ago. We're just going around in circles. At least in old movies, they'll say corny things like that. Now, over the years, no doubt, we've all had certain sins or problems we've been wanting to put out of our lives. And we may work especially hard at Passover and unleavened bread to finally put them out. And we finally succeed. We finally come out of that wilderness that we've been in, and we're so happy. We feel so spiritually renewed. We have a great spring festival. But then a month or two or perhaps 6 months goes by, and what can happen? Well, that sin or problem can rear its ugly head again. It can come back. And we'll feel like we're just back to where we started. It was just like we've just wandered around in a circle, wandering in the wilderness. Earlier we talked about the Israelites eating manna for 40 years. And I said there was a point that I wanted to bring up later about that. It involves another wilderness. But it's a wilderness that we're looking forward to being in. And it's found in Revelation 12. Let's please turn there. Revelation 12. And lessons that we are to learn now by keeping the days of unleavened bread will go a long way in helping us to prepare for this future wilderness. Revelation 12, verses 13 through 17. Revelation 12, verse 13. When the giant saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. And then verse 17, and the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went out to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. And this describes what we've referred to down through the years as the place of safety. But it also can be known as a place in the wilderness. Now, over the years, people in the church have speculated where this wilderness will be, what it'll be like, and what will we be doing there for 3.5 years? Haven't we speculated on that down through the years? But the Bible doesn't get very specific about this place in the wilderness. A question I have for all of us, and it involves a subject that is very near and dear to us, and that's food. If we are in the place of safety, this place in the wilderness, and I say if because, quite frankly, some of us will be in our graves when the church is taken to and protected in that wilderness. And then some of us may be described with those in verse 17. Let's read that again. Revelation 12, verse 17. The dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. They will not be in the place of safety, but they will have to face the wrath of Satan. And quite frankly, I'd rather be in the grave than with those described in verse 17. And that's why what we learn now by keeping Passover in the days of unleavened bread is so important. It can help keep us protected from Satan's wrath now and in the future. But I said the subject was food. What about it? Have you ever thought what we might eat in this place in the wilderness? It's interesting, we're told Satan will send a flood after God's church in the wilderness, but the earth will swallow it up. To put it in physical terms, could this be referring to an army that Satan controls? They know most of the church is in one area, and this army will attack the church. But God protects his people by having the army swallowed up, as God protected the children of Israel in the wilderness from Pharaoh's army by having his army swallowed up. God will protect the church in the wilderness, and he will care for and provide for his people in that wilderness, including providing food and water, as he did for the children of Israel. So how will God provide food? We don't know. We're not told. But you know, it's possible that God may feed his church with manna, as he did with the church of Israel, or children of Israel. What if God does do it that way? Now, it's easy for all of us to get excited about being fed with manna from God, isn't it? Our mouths may start watering just thinking about that. The Israelites ate manna for 40 years. We may eat manna for 3.5 years. Eat it for every meal of every day, of every week, of every month, of every year, for 3.5 years. Eat nothing but manna. Do we ever complain now about the food we may have to eat? Of course we do. But for us today, are we complaining because it's the same food in every meal, of every day, of every week, of every month, of every year? I think we can see where we're going with this. The children of Israel complained constantly. And one of their complaints was the food that God gave them to eat. They didn't like God's menu selection. And quite frankly, at times we can be more like the Israelites than we care to admit. Let's turn back to Numbers, Numbers 11. Numbers 11, let's pick it up in verse 1. The Israelites just never learned as they wandered in the wilderness. Numbers 11, verse 1. Then the people complained, it displeased the Lord, for the Lord heard it. His anger was aroused, so the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some in the outskirts of the camp. Then the people cried out to Moses, and when Moses prayed to the Lord, the fire was quenched. Let's understand what happened here. The people complained, and some were killed for doing so. So they cry out to Moses to have God relent, and God does. So what happens? Do they learn their lesson? No. But people complain about something else. But remember, that's what complainers do. They complain. Verse 4. Now the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense craving. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, "Who will give us meat to eat?" The Israelites were tired of the manna that God gave them. They wanted meat to eat. And this happened just over a year after they left Egypt. As the saying goes, be careful what you ask for, because you may receive it. And then their faulty memory takes over again. Verse 5. We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. Again, they wanted to go back to slavery in Egypt. As we know, Egypt spiritually represents sin. As we learn from observing these days of unleavened bread, we don't want to go back into sin. Verse 6, but now our whole being is dried up. There is nothing at all except this manna before our eyes. Now the manna was like coriander seed, and its color like the color of dillium. The people went about and gathered it, ground it in millstones or beat it on the mortar, cooked it in pans and made cakes of it. And its taste was like the taste of pastry prepared with oil. Verse 18. Then you shall say to the people, consecrate yourselves for tomorrow, and you shall eat meat. For you have wept in the hearing of the Lord, saying, who will give us meat to eat? For it was well with us in Egypt. Therefore, the Lord will give you meat, and you shall eat. In verse 19, you shall eat not one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days, but for a whole month, until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you, because you have despised the Lord who is among you and have wept before him, saying, why did we ever come out of Egypt? They wanted meat. They were going to get meat, all right. And they were going to get sick of it within a month. And then for a while, at least, that manna was going to look pretty good again to them. Now let's go back to that place in the wilderness where the church is going to be protected. For those of us who have been in the church a while, over the years, we've talked about the place of safety. The place in the wilderness where God will protect us. And we'll say how wonderful it will be to be there. And it will be. Let's not misunderstand that. It will be wonderful because we will be protected from God, from all those terrible things that will be happening in the world due to the wrath of Satan. Protected in a place that I remember one man calling it the place of final training. But nothing in the Bible says it will be comfortable in that wilderness where the church is protected. And sometimes we forget that. Quite frankly, over the years, sometimes to hear people talk about this place in the wilderness, it'll be like hearing these people talk. It'll be like we'll all be sleeping on Kingside's sort of perfect sleeper mattresses with cool breeze swishing through the caves, keeping us comfortable at night while we sleep. We'll all have 70-inch widescreen, high-definition satellite TVs as we watch them sitting in our lazy boy recliners in that place of safety. And then, of course, we'll have refrigerators and freezers just full of all types of food and drink to us. It'll be like the feast as we grill big, juicy steaks, as we fellowship around the campfire, and we sing songs as we're all praising God in that place in the wilderness. Who would complain about all that? Even the children of Israel wouldn't have complained if they had all those comforts during their time in the wilderness. Now, obviously, we know it's not going to be that way as we're protected in the wilderness. But, brethren, we have to realize how easy it is for us to read the account of the Israelites complaining in the wilderness. And, of course, we're thinking, oh, I would never have complained like the Israelites did. Well, some of us may have a chance to see if we would complain like that, living in the wilderness and eating manna for 3.5 years. But you know, brethren, we all have the opportunity now to see if we'll complain now like the Israelites did. As I was preparing this sermon and read again about the Israelites in the wilderness, and as I remembered that movie with John Wayne in the Sahara Desert, I asked myself if I've ever been in a wilderness that compare to those. And I guess the closest that I've come to is during my trips to Tucson, Arizona for the Feast of Tabernacles. Judy and I have been there twice. And it's a beautiful feast. If you get a chance, by all means, go. But Tucson is surrounded by the Sonoran Desert, which extends into Mexico. Get away from Tucson, and it is a desert wilderness. It's hot and dry with mountains all around. The Sonoran Desert is a desolate place. You don't want to be wandering in that wilderness without knowing what you're doing. One afternoon during the feast, we went to a place called Sabino Canyon, just outside Tucson. And that year during the feast, temperatures were at 100 degrees. At Sabino Canyon, you can take these trams, which will take you all through the canyon, all the way to the end and back. And there are stops along the way where you can get off and you can do some exploring, and then every, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, there's another tram going. It just keeps on. Several trams just keep on going around. And Judy and I did that several times. We'd get off and do some exploring among the rocks and the rest of the desert where you have been there. And as I remember, the rock formations in Sabino Canyon and the saguaro cactus, all the plants and bushes and trees were very interesting to see, and in their own way, very beautiful. On our way back, we decided to get off the tram about half a mile before the entrance. We wanted to walk the rest of the way. Since it was 100 degrees out, we only wanted to walk the last half mile. And we basically kept to the tram path. We didn't stray too far from it. And I remember how desolate it was and how difficult it would be to survive in such a wilderness. There's one point as we were going back to the entrance, Judy saw a plant off the path, about 10, 12 feet from it, and she wanted to get a closer look at it. And as she was looking at it, I stayed on the path. And as I'm standing there, I noticed about 30, 40 yards in front of me on the path, a snake about 6 feet long slithered across the path. Now, I don't know if it was a rattlesnake. It went across the path so quickly. And that was fine with me. I didn't have any inclination to run after it to see if it would stop and shake its rattle at me. Earlier, as one of our stops, we were doing a little, I don't want to think we were athletic and doing all this rock climbing, but we were climbing among the rocks, and I think Judy saw it first, but I was in front of her and walking up, and about 6 feet on a big rock, a snake was sunning itself. So as I'm going here, there's a snake, I immediately say, okay, let's go this way. Didn't bother us, it was sunning itself, and I wasn't going to bother it. I didn't tell Judy about the snake when I saw her going over. I could have said, hey, Judy, look at that snake, and she would have jumped 6 feet in the air. And I waited till we were about 40, 50 yards past where the snake, 30, 40 yards up the tram, and told her about the snake and never didn't see it. It was way out of distance. But you know, those are the things you'll find in the wilderness. Sabino Canyon is a desolate place, but it's also a beautiful wilderness. And that canyon does offer good protection. But I still wouldn't want to live out there in the rocks or in some cave with the heat and the snakes and the scorpions and whatever other creatures live out there. But again, you know what? That's what wildernesses are like. Children of Israel wandered in the wilderness of Sinai. Now, I've never been there, but I've seen pictures of it, and I've seen programs on PBS about it, and it is an extremely desolate place with snakes and scorpions and whatnot. Not a place I'd want to live in either. But I would describe Sabino Canyon as a protected place in the wilderness. And I can imagine the place of safety being a somewhat similar place. Can you imagine if someone had just been sleeping and they just woke up and hearing about the place of safety in Sabino Canyon and they're thinking, did he just say Sabino Canyon is the place of safety? I can see getting a phone call from Mr. Evans tonight because some tattletale called them to tell them that. And Mr. Evans is going to say, what are you telling the people in Knoxville? And this probably would have been my farewell sermon if that happens. But if he does call me, I'll say, was it a certain tattletale that called? And so I'll get out of it. Don't worry. But brethren, you know, if God leads us out to live in such a wilderness as Revelation 12 describes, we need to be spiritually prepared to go. Because if we are alive when that time comes for God's church to flee, if we're not spiritually prepared, we won't be there. We won't be protected by God. Instead, we'll have to face the wrath of Satan. But we can learn many lessons from the days of unleavened bread. And one important lesson is that we want to come out of the wilderness of sin, not wander in it. When we read about the children of Israel in the wilderness, we see that Moses did not really react well to adversity. And it cost them. Let's look at that. We're here in Numbers. Let's go to Numbers 13. Numbers 13, verse 2. Again, with the Israelites, the physical came before the spiritual. Numbers 13, verse 2. Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, every one a leader among them. Drop down to verse 25. And they returned from spying out the land after 40 days. And then verse 32. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature." Numbers 14, verse 2. And all the children of Israel complained. Can you imagine them complaining? Against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, "If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?" So they said to one another, "Let us select a leader and return to Egypt." Drop down to verse 27. "How long shall I bear with this evil congregation who complain against me? I've heard of the complaints which the children of Israel make against me. Say to them, 'As I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will do to you. The carcasses of you who have complained against me shall fall in this wilderness. All of you who were numbered according to your entire number from 20 years old and above, except for Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun, you shall by no means enter the land which I swore I would make you dwell in. But your little ones, whom you said would be victims, I will bring in, and they shall know the land which you have despised. But as for you, your carcasses shall fall in the wilderness, this wilderness, and your sons shall be shepherds in the wilderness for 40 years and bear the brunt of your infidelity until your carcasses are consumed in the wilderness. According to the number of the days in which you spied out the land, 40 days for each day you shall bear your guilt 1 year, namely 40 years, and you shall know my rejection. I, the Lord, have spoken this. I will surely do so to all this evil congregation who are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be consumed, and there they shall die." Where did the Israelites' complaining lead them? Well, led them to wander in the wilderness, in the desert. It led them to a lack of faith in God, and it led them not to enter the promised land. Now, they came to the edge, they came so close, but they missed out. Brethren, how do we react to adversity? And I think we can all agree this past year we've had a lot of adversity. Will we come right to the edge of our promised land and then miss out? Will we allow ourselves to be consumed by the wilderness of sin? Will we put the physical before the spiritual? Let's turn to Psalm 51, starting in verse 1. Psalm 51, verse 1. Something about King David that I'd like to bring out today. And I was reminded of it reading an old article by Mark Winner. Of course, he's now pastor in Georgia, and he's also the festival coordinator in Myrtle Beach. And in the article, he went over the differences between being sorry and being repentant. And a point for today is that just being sorry will leave us to wander in the wilderness, while having true repentance will bring us out of the wilderness. And the article quoted Psalm 51, verses 1 through 4, David's prayer of repentance. Psalm 51, verse 1, "Have mercy upon me, O God, according to your loving kindness, according to the multitude of your tender mercies. Blot out my transgressions, wash me thoroughly from my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin. For I acknowledge my transgressions, and my sin is always before me. Against you, you only, have I sinned and done this evil in your sight, that you may be found just when you speak and blameless when you judge." Now, when I first read verse 4 many, many years ago, I was confused. David prayed that he sinned against God only. And many years ago, I thought, well, what about Uriah, Bathsheba, the baby that died? And then there were all those people who were betrayed by David. What about what David did to them? But brother, we need to realize, as David did, God comes first. Yes, we hurt and wrong others, but God comes first. And when we sin against him. And until we have that repentant attitude, we'll just continue to wander in the wilderness. We won't change. God must come first. It's seek first his kingdom. Seek first his righteousness. And these days, including this last day of unleavened bread, are all about what God did for us and what we will do for God. God sent his only Son, Jesus the Christ, to die for our sins so that we may have everlasting life. What are we doing for God in return? This week reminded us of that. There was another article that talked about David's prayer of repentance. And I like how it was put about David. When we look at the string of David's sins, we can say that he was a great sinner. But yet God continued to use him. In fact, he said David was a man after his own heart. Why? Yes, David was a great sinner, but he was also a great repenter. And David was able to come out of his wilderness. And that type of repentance that David has so much to do with the days of unleavened bread. And it's a repentance that we should emulate. Brethren, let's realize that when we do sin, it's an affront to God. And David came to know that. Now, many of us have kept this feast for years, and sometimes, you know, we can get to thinking that we've kept it so many times that we've heard it all, and, you know, quite frankly, we know it all. We need to realize that that type of thinking will only lead us back into the wilderness. Brethren, today we've talked about physical wilderness, and we've talked about spiritual wilderness. And a spiritual wilderness can be different for each of us. As we examined ourselves before Passover, as the days of unleavened bread started, we knew what leaven we needed individually to put out. Or as we've been saying in this sermon, we know what wilderness we need to come out of. When God called us, most of us came out of the wilderness of false Christianity. Later, many of us came out of the wilderness of deceit. But as the children of Israel came out of Egypt, they soon had to deal with the wilderness of sin. And as we came out of Egypt this week, we too will be faced with the wilderness of sin. Because, brethren, we can come out of one sin and go just right back into another sin. But as Passover reminded us, as unleavened bread reminds us, we're coming out of that wilderness, and we're not going back into it. I saw a sign outside a restaurant that read, "Dear Lord, I have a problem. It's me." A good attitude to have this week. Quite frankly, it's a good attitude to have all year long. Over the years, we've all told on ourselves about the times we accidentally ate leavening during the days of unleavened bread. You know, go to Dunkin' Donuts for a cup of coffee, and of course, where do they have the donuts? Right there in the cash register where you're paying, and you see all these donuts, and you absentmindedly say, "Oh, and I'll have a sour cream donut. That's my wife and I's favorite donut there." Not remembering it's the days of unleavened bread. Or you can go to lunch at a place like O'Charley's or all-you-can-eat place, Golden Corral, and they'll bring out these big fluffy yeast rolls, and you're just talking to someone, and maybe at work, people at work went out, and you just grab one and start eating it, and of course they put butter with it because they're nice and hot, and you lather it up with butter, and you take a couple of bites and go, "Oops." Or at work, someone may bring you a piece of cake because it's someone's birthday or whatever, and you just absentmindedly eat it. I remember one time at work, that's what someone did to me. They brought a piece of cake, and I just ate it during the days of bread. The same day, someone at Judy's work had cookies and said, "Judy, you like a cookie?" "Oh, yeah, let me have a cookie." And so on the same day, we ate cookies and cake. But something like that has probably happened to most, if not all of us. And we'll laugh about it now, I sure do. But you know, it is good to remember those times that we did slip up because the physical reminds us of the spiritual. But this year, as we end the days of unleavened bread, let's do this. Let's keep track of the physical leavening that we may have led in our lives this past week. But also let's keep track of the spiritual leavening that not may have led in this week, but we did let it in our lives this week. Now, we probably won't laugh at the spiritual leavening that we let into our lives this week. Most definitely we won't laugh at that. But brethren, it will help us to be focused on what these days represent. And it will help keep us focused as we come out of our wilderness. Spring is a season of change. It's all the redbud trees, and in our yard we have a beautiful forsythia, or March bells, and it's a big bush, and it's been fully in bloom. It's gorgeous. Now the yellow flowers are dropping off just as our redbud trees are popping out. And I've always thought of only the forsythia and the red buds can bloom at the same exact time. It'd just be so beautiful, but appreciate the times that they do. But spring is a season of change. As we preparing for Passover, and as we learn by keeping the days of unleavened bread, we are to change. We are to put out those old ways. Put out those sins that seem to plague us continually. Brethren, yes, a prime message for this week is change. While most of the Christian world has no real interest in changing. In fact, many of them are just told to just accept Christ. You don't have to change. So it's not only come as you are, it's stay as you are. And that's why so many continue to wander in the wilderness. Let's turn to Romans 18, verse 4, as we close for today. If I said Romans, I meant Revelation 18, verse 4. This week reminds us to come out of the wilderness. And the days of unleavened bread are an excellent preparation for what is to come. Revelation 18, verse 4. Well, let's pick it up in verse 2. This is where the world is heading to, and fast. Revelation 18, verse 2. And he cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and has become a dwelling place for demons, a prison for every false spirit, and a cage for every unclean and hated bird. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. And then verse 4, and I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, and lest you receive of her plagues. We've been reminded this week to come out of Egypt. And we don't want any part of this Babylon that Revelation describes. But brethren, let's remember, if we don't come out of and stay out of the wilderness of this world, we won't be in that place of protection in the wilderness where God will take his church. And that's not what the days of unleavened are about. So, brethren, let's remember to follow David's example on this last day of unleavened bread as we all become great repenters today, tomorrow, all year long. So, brethren, have a very meaningful and profitable rest of the last day of unleavened bread, and good Sabbath.